This is a Gathering Heritage project interview recorded in County Louth in Ireland.
Now, I'm delighted to welcome Catriona Lynch to our Gathering Heritage project. She's in to talk to me a little bit about, I suppose, now with Brexit coming up and hard borders and soft borders and everything. This would be probably, Catriona, a bit of an interest to you because you lived just across the border. Tell us a little bit about where you lived.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Forkhill in South Armagh, not too far from Dundalk and not too far from Newry, but yet we always consider Dundalk as being our local town. As I say, because geographically it was closer. There was always a border there when I was a kid. It's not obviously, of course, as visible now as it was then. But when I was a child, the famous phrase was, hop the border. You know, we're going to hop the border. Obviously, you had something to hop the border with. I never knew what it was.
I would just be going down to the Republic or coming back.
I have a funny feeling it was going both ways. It was a great two-way street, you know. The border, of course, was always very lucrative for some. Unfortunately, not for us. There was people and they made a lot of money out of the border, you know, being the way it was. As I say, we didn't fall under that particular category. But it was always there, you know, quite visible in some instances because you had customs huts at different locations. We didn't have one now on the Carrickastickin Road. That's where the end of the Carrickastickin Road would join on to, we'll say, the lands of Kilcurry, that area. And there was a wee road shot off up to the side and it was capped.
So you could go that wee unapproved road, please?
It was a totally unapproved road. There was a signpost up for years. In fact, I wouldn't mind finding one of those signposts, unapproved road. And once you were on an unapproved road, you were instantly, you know, breaking the law. We had no choice because that was our best, easiest access in and out.
And an unapproved road meant that nobody could go on it?
Technically, no. Technically, you should not have crossed there. You should have gone to an official crossing point where it was manned with permanent customs men at a customs post. This didn't have customs men permanently. They sort of stationed themselves like fairly covertly in their car or whatever up a wee side road. So we'd be going into Dundalk or out of Dundalk or whatever. We'd obviously have something with us. I never knew what we had because obviously, as you know, by looking at me, Harry, I'm just so young. You know, I'm perpetually young. I've a picture of the attic. I never get old, you know. But we'd be crossing the border and my father would be saying, keep an eye out there now, keep an eye out. Is there any cars following us? And just like that time, there was only about three cars in the county, for God's sake, you know.
Did you ever find out what he might have been carrying?
Never did. Actually, genuinely never did. It could have been butter, could have been sugar, it could have been anything, I don't know. I don't think it was anything in actual fact. I think he was just nervous of being on the road that he shouldn't have been on.
And these fellows with uniforms and everything.
Oh, they'd be in uniforms. Oh, God, yes, they would be, of course, yes.
Catriona, I have to say, I've never been in Forkhill. But I was thinking about this before I came out to talk to you today.
You don't know what you're missing, Harry. It's a total metropolis.
Isn't it? I intend now to take a tour around it. You can take me down someday and we'll go on a tour around. Show me that unapproved road and everything.
Yes, yeah.
But I remember going to afternoon hops in Carrickastickin.
Oh, yes. There was a dance hall on the Carrickastickin Road. I vaguely remember that, yes. Yeah. I think it was a forester's hall. It might have been a forester's hall.
So how far was that from Forkhill? If I had to keep going past
If you had to keep going two more minutes and you'd be in the middle of Forkhill village.
What kind of a village is it? Is it big? Is it, many people would...
It's a fairly small kind of village. I suppose the population there might be 1,200, 1,400. Thereabouts. It's small. It's a tiny village. Always was.
Wonderful place to grow up in that kind of very safe and everything.
It was so safe. I mean, come the summer holidays, like, you know, like your mother would be delighted that the summer holidays had come because she'd know that she could open the front door or the back door and say, out, don't come back until you're hungry. And you come back when you're hungry. And so you're out from under her feet the whole day. You'd come home for maybe a bit of lunch, if you thought of it, if you had time, because you could be catching spricks in the river. You know, you'd tuck your skirt into the elastic of your knickers and you get in and paddle around in the water with your jam jar and you'd be catching spricks. And you'd come home.
What did you call them?
spricks, tiny, tiny fish.
We called them pinnigans.
Oh, well, minnows was another word as well.
Oh, right.
But I only ever heard people from around the south calling them minnows, and I thought, minnows, they're not minnows, they're spricks. These people know nothing. And here I am, you know, living south of the border now, 40-odd years.
Well, when you were young, growing up, had you any idea that you were living in a different country, shall we say, Northern Ireland and the Republic? Was that ever...
Never. It was never really discussed or mentioned in a big discussion at all. My mother was born and raised in Carlingford, married a man from Forkhill, moved to Forkhill. It was just never mentioned. Like, the border, differences, nothing was ever mentioned.
Do you find that strange now, when you think back, Katrina?
I suppose now I would, because of the way things are. But then there was no animosity, there was no fear, there was no danger, there was no troubles, there was nothing. It was all very safe. Childhood was lovely. You know, you could go out, you were safe, you'd come home when you were good and ready. Your mother always knew where you were. If she wanted you back in, all she had to do was go outside the back door, holler your name, and you'd hear it, it'd float in the air, and you'd, oh, wait a minute, oh, that's my mother, I'm about to go, she must want me. And you'd go. No mobile phones.
So had you any idea of a difference with Catholics and Protestants, or was it all Catholics nearly in Falkirk?
Majority was Catholic. 90% was Catholic. And the few that weren't just blended in. And there was never anything ever said about, oh, that one's like not one of us. Yeah. She, you know, was from the other side of the community. Mm. Nothing of that at all, ever. Ever. And they all integrated. Yeah. Everybody got on.
But look, again, as we say, hindsight's a great thing to have a conversation about. Yeah. But now when you think back and all that has happened from those days up until now, with the border and everything now, it's strange, isn't it, though, that there was no concept of trouble or nothing at all?
No. It was like Forkhill, and I suppose this went for a lot of other little villages and small towns along the border. It was a little oasis of tranquility. It genuinely was. There was nothing. The only trouble that would be closing time of the pubs on a Saturday night. You know, would there be handbags at dawn and that kind of thing. But nothing at all. No animosity, no snide remarks, nothing. They lived, they shopped, they communicated with everybody, and everybody communicated with them.
How far is Forkhill from Cross Midland?
Driving time is 30 minutes. So I suppose it's about 20 miles thereabouts.
How do you, like, Cross Midland was, during all the Troubles, a very Republican place. Mm-hmm. Did you think at all at that time there was anything strange about Cross Midland? Would you have gone to Cross Midland?
I went to secondary school in Cross Midland. Initially, I thought it was very strange because they jived and sang country and western songs. And I thought, we don't do this kind of thing in Forkhill. We're very grand in Forkhill, you know, and we have a non-regional dialect in Forkhill. Now I can hear the accent, you know, now it's only later on in years you can hear all these things. But Cross Midland was a very interesting place, a lovely place to go to. Great little town, thriving town. And I still have a lot of friends from school. One particular girl that I was in class with, and we're still friends to this very day. Now, Cross Midland was interesting because you could be sitting up in the top story of it was a two-story school, and room four, and you'd look out because you wouldn't really be listening to the teacher half the time. You know, I'd be there with your hand under your chin. You'd be looking out the wind. And then there was one day we were sitting with our hand under the chin looking out the window, and there was a man skating across the field. And about 20, 30 minutes later, the electric pylon that we had been looking at just went down like a tree been failed. So there was a bomb put under that, and it was blown up. Lights out, buses were called, everybody got home. Sure, it was great. And that's how we lived. And that's the way it was.
So what year are you talking about there?
That would be 70s, in the early 70s.
That was just when it was really starting wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was interesting. On a daily basis, it was interesting. There was something. There was always something, you know.
And would you have been stopped by police and soldiers on going to school?
Oh, you'd be stopped, yes. You would be at least once a week, you'd be stopped. either going to or coming from, and they'd get on to the bus. What they were looking for, I will never know. Of course, there'd be a few lads that would be very brave and they'd make some sort of a snide remark, and you know, they'd be grabbed by the scruff of the neck and hauled out, and the bus would be delayed, and we'd be shouting out the window, "Let him go, let him go," and we'd start tramping our feet and stuff. But you know, kids.
So when you look back at it and see all the for the next year and year, all the trouble there was in the north, mm. like that was the beginning of it down there, and it never affected a place like Fochill.
Well, we had a massive barracks. There was a barracks there, and Sergeant White and his wife and family lived in the barracks, and they came and went, drove up to their front door, and you know, if somebody had stolen milk from your front door after the milkman had been, you'd go up and report to the policeman or whatever. That's how it was. It was all very friendly, very old style. And then the troubles came and the barracks sort of mushroomed from a little small thing into this monstrous location, huge. Apparently there was underground bunkers and everything. I don't know if that's right or not. But it just mushroomed into this massive fortress, and that kind of loomed over the village, and it definitely had an impact. A bigger impact, I suppose, really, because I can remember the first day the troops actually arrived into Fochill village, and they came up the Longfield Road. They obviously came from Camla, Bessbrook direction, came up the Fochill Road, and like a lot of people who had heard the trundling of these big lorries and Saracens and everything, like, came out to see what was going on, because nobody was told about this. Nobody knew. And of course, we were all out standing on the middle road looking. And I will never forget the look on my father's face when he seen all these military vehicles coming up and soldiers looking out of the back of a truck, and a guy in a Saracen with his head stuck up, you know, like the way you see chipmunks sticking up out of the ground. He was like one of those, and looking round, and my father was just...
Would he have been frightened about what the future was going to hold? Is that kind of...
But it was a look of contempt, you know, what the hell are yous doing here? You know, like, you've no right in being here. These young whippersnappers that knew nothing about the land they were on, 9 times out of 10 didn't even know where they were. Geographically, had no idea they were putting a boat or a plane and said, just go into the north of Ireland. They think, right, north of Ireland, right, well, it's the north of Ireland. They had no idea where they were.
So how close were they to the border? How far, like, what is...
only minutes from the border. Like, minutes from the border. Hence all the map reading errors that the British Army had, and they'd wander into Kilcurry and on into Dundalk, whatever. Which was always funny considering all the equipment that they had both on the ground and in the air. But on that particular day that they arrived first into Fochill village, there was a young chap, a member of a family that lived in Fochill. And this chap, he was a character. He was a great character. And anything that was wrong in the village, he was blamed for it. He wouldn't necessarily have been the culprit, but he'd be the automatic person to point the finger at. And he happened to be standing in the right place at the right time on that day. And they stopped and asked directions to the barracks. I mean, seriously, can you believe that? So he said... From the character. They stopped and asked this particular... We'll call him Joe, for the hell of it. So they stopped and asked Joe in their lovely, well-heeled English accent, because it'd be a major or something that'd be fronting this whole thing. You know, and how can we get to the barracks, young man?
So they were dropped off by helicopter or whatever.
They all came in Saracens and trucks, big trucks, covered in trucks and jeeps. And didn't know. No, that's what I said. None of them knew where they were going. They knew they were being sent to Ireland, and that was pretty much it. Like, none of them thought of looking at a map. Will we have a wee look now? We just see where Fochill is, so as we can get in our head. No, it never occurred to them. So they stopped and they asked Joe how to get to the barracks. And so what he done was, and fair play to him, what he done was he sent them in the opposite direction. I mean, they should have copped, because they had to keep doing left-hand turns. You know, go up there and you take the second left and you keep on that road until you come to a T-junction and you go left again. And go on ahead that road now, and the barracks will be on your left. I mean, like, seriously, what can you join the dots and think to say, well, I'm going left here, I'm going around a circle. Which they actually did. They went around pretty much in a circle. And they got to their destination finally, but they tracked him down a couple of days later, and he paid dearly for his...
Seriously?
Yeah, he paid dearly for his smart alecky. poor chap to kick the living daylights out of him. Now he lived to tell the tale, and he was the local hero. He eventually then he emigrated to England, well, for work and stuff, you know, and he was over there for years. In fact, I've seen him recently in Mullaban at the Blessing the Graves, and it was a pleasure to see him.
It's a great story, isn't it?
Oh my God. It's a classic.
And Katrina, in your house, now you mentioned there in Cross Midland, the country music and the jiving and everything.
Oh God, yeah.
What kind of
stuff.
Yeah, but am I right saying that maybe in Cross Midland, maybe, or in Falkill, it would have been more, was the rebel song sung in your house? Or?
Well, in my house there was, because my mother was a terrific singer. Oh, well, Kevin Barry would be a favourite.
Oh, right,
and of course, Boule Vogue and anything else that she could lay her hands on, in particular in the times of the Troubles. Like my mother, she could be upstairs making beds or whatever, changing sheets or hanging fresh curtains or whatever, and she'd see the soldiers coming out on patrol, so she'd fling open the windows and lash out Kevin Barry. But they didn't know. They hadn't a clue. She might as well be singing Dancing in the Dark, you know, as far as they were concerned. They would have had no concept of Kevin Barry or what it entailed. But she did, and she was in her own way striking her blow, you know. And she had a good voice; she had a great voice. So yeah, fair play to her.
Now you're a good singer. Now, did you sing? No, we've heard you singing a good. But did you sing ever sing in concerts or anything down there, or at school or anything?
Oh, at school and in the school plays, yes, of course you would surely. Yes, purely to make up numbers. They had to make up numbers because people really didn't want to set foot on stage. But you'd be part of a group and you'd be singing all these group songs, and maybe there's a play on as well and you'd be in that, and yeah, a bit of crack.
Did you ever go to Belfast or Dublin? Which of them would you have gone to?
Dublin would have been just that wee bit too far away, ironically, even though we're kind of situated half and half, really. Well, Forkill would have been. So Belfast would have been the place of choice, but not necessarily on a regular basis. I think as a child, I was down there twice. I know once for sure was when my sister Marion was becoming a nurse and we went down to get her uniform. And I just remember walking round the street to find this particular shop so she could get rigged out for her nurse's uniform. And my mother was living in dread that she's going the whole way to Belfast. Oh my God, almighty God, love her. She'd be far away from home, and she was never away from home before. And of course, my father was delighted to get rid of half of us because it meant that there was less mouths to feed, you know. But she done well with her nursing, and, you know, she's retired now, of course. But that would have been pretty much as a child twice.
How long did it take you to get from Falkill to Dundalk?
From Forkill to Dundalk, well, those times, of course, you know, the car wouldn't be the kind of car you'd have now. You know, top speed would be like 45 mile an hour. The roads would have been in appalling condition, like they really were. Well, mostly on the southern side. Always the northern roads.
Yeah, and that was the same way. You'd know when you were going into the north.
Oh my God, yes. But funny, that's changed. You know, we have very, very good roads, great infrastructure down here. And the north has, in some instances, kind of fallen back a little bit. But then, I mean, you went off this nice, smooth surface on the Carrick Stickin Road onto chugga, chugga, chugga. You'd have to hold, no seatbelts then, of course. You'd hold on to the edge of the seat, make sure you didn't fall off or whatever.
And what shops would you go to in Dundalk? Would you do your weekly shopping groceries?
No, it was never like that. Never like that. You'd done your shopping on a daily basis in McCreesh's shop in Forkhill. And we only lived like 30 seconds away from it, basically.
And this was just a little, small,
Constant
local shop.
But it was big. It was a big shop. You know, in size, it was big. And they had everything. You know, they would have had everything. And that's where you went every day. And for to do, you know, Saturday, you might get a list. So your mother would write out the list, or she'd get you to write it out while she was, you know, washing. She was always working. My mother, God love her, she was always working. I know Maud Conn's either. But so you'd write out the list, and beside it, you'd write down how much you kind of remembered each item was. You'd tot it all up, all mentally, no calculators or nothing like that. You'd tot it all up, and you'd say to her, that'll come to, like, you know, £5, 2 shillings and sixpence or whatever. So the money would be wrapped up in the note.
In sterling?
In sterling. The money would be wrapped up in the note, and you'd be sent up to McCreesh's, and you'd read out your list, because they fetched everything for you. You didn't go in with a basket or a trolley and pick stuff off the shelf. That was shoplifting. You know, that was the equivalent of shoplifting. Nowadays, that's what's done. Of course, it's quite acceptable because it's all different. But you go up with your note and your money wrapped up in a wee ball, and your stuff would be served, and ham, you get fresh cut ham and the whole lot.
And the cheese, I suppose. The cheese was my favourite in all them wee shops.
Yes. They always had lovely white cheddar cheese, was the nicest. And it was cut, of course, with a cheese wire. And if the cheese wire, if something happened, if it broke, whatever, it was a big knife, this massive big knife that was used, you know, it was a scary thing. If you needed a new bulb for a light that had blown, they had a wee socket built into the wall that was especially for sticking the bulb in, give it a twist, make sure that the bulb worked before they send you off with it. You know, like stuff like that. It was great. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
When you came to Dundalk, where did you change your money?
Well, we didn't actually. We didn't.
I don't ever recall changing money.
Yeah, I was just wondering because, like, the punts was here at that time, wasn't it?
Yes,
you would have had sterling, but you'd have to change it somewhere.
I don't believe we actually did. I can't recall.
And how would you pay for it?
It was like for like. It was like for like, you see. Once upon a time, it was pound for punt. That's the way it was. It was like for like. So, you know, no problem.
And what shops in Dundalk would you go to?
Well, now, of course, the visit to Dundalk mostly would be with my mother to a hairdresser's. And, of course, then there'd be the obligatory visit to Dairies. And then into Comiskey's for a peruse around Comiskey's, which I ended up working in then for some years as well and loved every minute of it. There were great people to work for, John Comiskey and Sons.
Cross-McLean
people, couldn't ask about the people. They were brilliant and brilliant to work for. We had some great times. Of course, Leitz was just across the road as well, Harry, as you will remember. But of course, Dairies, and as I said, the hairdresser, and you know, my mother would say to me, Fanny, now pull up as close as you can now to the hairdresser. And he'd be trying to get as close to the hairdresser's door as he could, you know. And she'd say, can you not get any further? Well, do you want me to get out and shove all them cars?
No traffic wardens then.
No traffic wardens then. So, you know, God love us, you'd have to walk a small distance, you know, to go to the hairdresser's. Because he'd just sit there. He'd leave the car there and he'd go for a walk, maybe up the street, whatever, and buy a paper or get a cup of tea or something, and the car would be there ready for her when she came out of it. My God, she was treated like royalty. She was gas.
You mentioned those shops there, Dairies, Leitz, and Comiskey's.
Yeah.
And when you go down to Lambrasse Street now, I know there's some of the Inn Dairies at the moment, but all those shops are gone.
It's all different. Yeah. And then Melville's, of course, was there as well. Melville's was a big one. And I can vaguely remember Melville's before it changed into being something else and up marketing and stuff. And they had that great pipe system, the suction pipe system. The money had put into this wee tube and twist it and then popped into the yolk, the flap was shut, oh my God, I loved that. And I used to say to myself, I want to work here when I get bigger because I want to be on the receiving end of that, to stand and catch it when it comes out, you know. I thought I had this idea that it would come zooming out from upstairs somewhere, that you'd have to stand well back, you know. I was fascinated with that system,
So would you go and have something to eat in Dundalk before you went home?
You'd probably go to Woolworths. You'd go into Woolworths.
It'd be just sweets or biscuits or something.
You could get a cup of tea and a bun in Woolworths. And they had a wee counter there where you could sit up and get a wee cup of tea and chips, of course.
And when you were in your teenagers, where did you come up to Dundalk to go to the pictures or where would you go? Would you go to Newry? We didn't mention Newry, actually.
Newry.
Was Newry something you went to?
Newry you would go to, surely, because you'd have to go in for different things, especially if you had to go into the council offices about something or whatever. So you'd go into Newry, surely. And my mother shopped in Foster's in Newry for clothes, for communion, confirmation and whatnot. And then wallpaper and paint. And there would be a regular visit to Newry. When the bus went to see, the bus stopped pretty much outside our door. So there was no reason not to go to Newry. The bus was there. So my mother would take off. We'd go to school and she'd go to Newry while we'd be gone to school, and she'd be home then for when we'd come back. And she'd get her bits and pieces, whatever needed to be got. And that's how we lived. Yes, no fancy shopping, you know.
I think if I ever had money, won the lotto, big money, I would make a series. Do you know the one with Little House in the Prairie? Oh, that kind of the soft living. And you are making Fork Hill, to me today, the nicest place on earth to grow up.
It actually was. You were so safe. Like, you really were so safe, and everybody knew everybody else. And of course, during the summer holidays, the sun always shone, the grass was always greener, you know. There was very little water in the river, but when it was there, you paddled in it, you know. It was a nice place to live. The only thing we didn't have at that time was our own chapel. We had to go to the Mullaban or Drumontee, which, okay, that was all right. There was a bus.
But there was a Protestant church.
There was indeed. The Protestant church was there. It is still there, not operational as a church. It was sold some years ago and converted into a living premises. So it's somebody's home right now at the moment. A lovely setting, beautiful, typical, you know, Presbyterian Church of Ireland was actually a typical Church of Ireland surroundings with the lovely palm trees and it's so nice. It's really nice.
When you consider what children are growing up to now, the problems they have and all these iPhones and all these kind of stuff, and of the growing up you had around that age in a lovely place like Fork Hill, it must make you think.
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, when I would waken up in the morning, one of the first things that I would see was beautiful Slave Gullion, gorgeous and majestic, looking down at me. And of course, you had Fox Rock then to the other side of me. We were surrounded on three ends by mountains. We had Fox Rock, Slave Gullion, and then Slave Brack, with a smaller mountain, which was called Slave Crush. Nowadays, it's called Cross Slave, that whole mountain region there. So you had those three mountains. We were surrounded by that. So our gap of the north, our gap was immediately into the south, you know, because I suppose with the mountains, it was kind of a barrier. But it was, and still is, the nicest part of the country to. As soon as I cross the border, anytime I go home, once I am one inch into South Armagh, I just go, oh God, that's great, that's lovely. I still do prefer Dundalk, I have to say. Even it's just always been there.
Yeah, but sure, you Jerry Lynch went down there and took you out of that lovely place.
Yes.
And to Tallinstown, but you're in a lovely place now.
I am. Like, Tallinstown is absolutely gorgeous, and I live on the Glyde Road, and Glyde Manor is just down the road from me, where the Fosters lived, and it's a shambles now. It's a shell of a place, but the history that is attached to that area, you have Louth Hall as well. Then you have Stevenstown Pond with Stevenstown House and Knockbridge. We are actually in Knockbridge Parish where I live, but it's too far to go to.
But you still love going back to Fork Hill.
Still love going back to Fork Hill. Oh God, yes. Yeah.
Now, you've made it sound absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to put you on the spot here for me. Would you sing for me, you know, I hope you can do it. Some kind of a song that connected with Fork Hill.
Well, it'd have to be the Boys from the County Armagh, wouldn't it?
Would you have a wee go at it for me?
Have a wee go, yeah. Now, you'll be probably cut off, struck off air, never to go on it again, was anybody here?
Is it a song you used to sing in the house?
It probably was. You would have sung all those old songs and the old camellias.
Bridie Gallagher made the big one with that, didn't she? The Boys from the County Armagh.
She would have done, yes. Yeah, she did. Bridie, she was a Donegal woman, wasn't she? Yeah. She had a great voice. She was brilliant.
Right, whenever you're ready.
Okay, right. There's one fair county in Ireland with memories so glorious and grand, where nature has lavished its bounty. It's the orchard of Erin's green land. It's my own Irish home, far across the foam. Although I've often left it in foreign lands to roam, no matter where I wander, through cities near or far, sure me heart is at home in old Ireland, in the county of Armagh. Shinny.
Katrina, thank you very much indeed for that lovely half hour.
Thank you, Harry. It was a pleasure. Good fun. Thank you.
Listen to the full interview on www.gatheringheritage.com.